Good afternoon and welcome to this week's What Comes Next Live. I'm going out as we most often do at Tuesday 5:30 UK time. I'm coming to you from my usual global headquarters somewhere in London. And also somewhere in London is this week's guest, Lena Robinson, the mastermind guru, and I'm sure she'll be much more accurate in explaining to me of FTSQ and all that involves. We met a few weeks ago at a workshop run by next week's guest, Minta Dyer, on meaningful communications. And I was most taken with the very meaningful input that Lena had. And we had a chat afterwards. And then I invited her on. So this is my first time really chatting to her. So I'm really excited to meet Lena and hear what is on her mind. Welcome.
Cool. Thank you for having me on. Kind of excited about today just to have a chat. Be good.
Chats are good. Chats are good. So let's get started. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. And we generally talk about what comes next, but just tell us a little bit about yourself, the audience, and where you've been and where you are now.
Sure. So as you can probably all tell, I'm not from Britain or the UK, but I have lived in London for the last 21 years this year. I'm from New Zealand originally. I came over here when I was 30, so I'm halfway through my life, is how I like to put it at the moment. About to turn 51 in a couple of weeks. I love London. I think it's an amazing, chaotic, beautiful place, and I stay here for a lot of reasons, particularly the chaos and the beauty of so meeting so many people. My background started in small to medium businesses and rest homes and retirement villages. I've had a very winding road to get there. Been a finance director of my parents' landscaping business, worked in construction. I've been an operations director, but eventually, having studied design and photography in a proper old school darkroom and art, I thought I was going to end up at some point in the creative industry, which I did. So when I landed over here, I went into sort of lead generation for agencies and new business for advertising and creative and marketing agencies, which I stayed in for a significant amount of time doing that globally, doing big pitches and that kind of thing, and ended up sort of wanting to leave the corporate world because being a bit of a maverick wasn't really my thing and kind of didn't really like to be told what to do, which I still don't. That kind of love of the nonconformist, though, was always there because of my parents. They're quite always had artists and creative kind of people around them. So I decided to launch my own business in 2014. It went really well. It was a creative and marketing agency and loved it for a long time, but then eventually decided that I want to do something else. So 2018, sold that business to my business partner amicably and really, really great handover to him. I wanted to do more, though. I wanted to do more than just work with agencies. I wanted to work with, like I said, the squiggly brained nonconformists, hence FTSQ, which hopefully I'm allowed to swear, stands for fuck the status quo. And what that's about is, you don't have to conform to be successful. A lot of people are told that. And so I wanted to work in that kind of world. Unfortunately, within a few months, I started to come down with what ended up being a long-term chronic illness, which I'm just coming out of properly, although I've been trying over the last couple of years to do that. In the last few months, really, my health has really started to pick up. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment, hence why I'm really looking forward to the what's next part of our conversation.
So you came down with a chronic illness that you're coming out of, what,
Several.
five years or so, if I'm doing
Yeah.
the rough maths. So you were
Close to six, actually, I think now.
okay.
Yeah.
What did looking as we will towards the future, that's obviously a big experience. I had something significant but less in that I had cancer unexpectedly in 2022, but it knocked me sideways for 5 months. But I'm out of the other side of that now, and it was only 5 months, very hard 5 months, but only 5 months. But I will say there are a lot of things I learned. So I'd be really interested in what did you learn from
That.
the experience?
Do you know what? I was having a conversation with a friend about this today. I think, if you believe in the universe teaching you a lesson, which I very much do, it was telling me to slow down. I have been running in my corporate life and running my businesses at a million miles an hour I didn't think about myself, didn't look after myself particularly well, drank too much. Unfortunately, I have sleep apnea and severe insomnia, so I don't sleep very well either. So my body ended up with the consequences of years of living on adrenaline, doing too many hours at work, being stressed all the time, literally living on stress hormones constantly, and kind of self-medicating with, I'm not going to say I was an alcoholic because I wasn't. Unfortunately, I was a very high functioning person that could drink or not drink, but when I did drink, I drank a lot, always in control. But my body was, it was masking what was really going on. I think the lesson that I've learned, particularly, A, was I have to think about my health and wellness first, above all, above my clients, above my business, above everything, because I can't be there for people if I'm not well. I can't be there for myself. I can't be there for my business. But the other thing I've learned is up until that point, I was always the strong person. I was always the person who everybody turned to, who I saw vulnerability, not in anybody else, but my own vulnerability as weakness. And one of the most epiphany moments I've had in my life was when I finally admitted to everybody, because I've kind of been hiding it on social media and pretending that everything was well when it wasn't. I mean, I financially lost everything, everything, and I've had to start again. I had money in the bank when I first got sick, so I just sold my business. But financially, I've lost everything. My wellness will never be 100%. There will always be things I'll have to fight with and deal with and manage. And I think the strength to be vulnerable has been something that I've had to learn. Patience, which anybody that knows me knows that patience and I do not go very well together. I'm quite, particularly with myself and stupid shit. I get impatient with dumb stuff that just doesn't seem to make any logical sense. So I've learned to be patient with myself and others, but also, although I was always an empathetic person, always, scoring like in the 90s to or sometimes 100% of in tests and things, it has taught me a huge amount of empathy, but also resilience and what matters.
And what matters?
Actually truly matters. And a very simple thing, which I think I'm quite a positive person by nature, but it's that it's about finding joy in the simple things every day. To also trust in yourself and to stay true to, and this is going to sound so wanky, stay true to my purpose. Because something like that, I mean, my confidence has always been really high. Anybody that knows me, that it's not a fake confidence. I do believe in myself. But when I got sick, I got the shit kicked out of me for a long time, and it's taken ages. And I'm still working on it now. I'm going to be open and upfront. I'm in therapy to try and manage my mindset and try and get myself back to believing in myself. The effect was neurological initially. So I sometimes couldn't say the right words. I couldn't talk properly. It had a knock-on effect, and my confidence has been massively knocked, which most people, and I'm really good at hiding it. But I have anxiety, and it can be quite debilitating sometimes. I hide it, and I don't let other people see it. But I'm now learning that it's okay to just be me and to be vulnerable. I still probably mentally see it as weakness, even though in other people I don't see it that way. So being kind to Lena is a big thing.
Being kind to Lena, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Not an easy task when I've naturally beaten myself up all my life.
wow, that's a lot of really powerful things to be taught by a pretty crappy, shitty journey.
Here's the funny thing. Every time I think I've learned all I need to learn, my illnesses will sometimes come and slap me up the side of the head and put me in bed for a week and go, yep, slow down. Told you. That is kind of funny.
It's a phrase that an amazing mentor, people who know me know I talk about him all the time, called Ed Percival, who died in 2015. And he used to say, "The universe, she will keep teaching you the same lesson over and over again in different forms until you choose to learn it."
Yep.
So that's where you
Yes.
started. And yeah, I mean, vulnerability is a superpower.
Yeah, and I mean, I technically knew about it because I was a big fan of Brené Brown and the power of vulnerability. Didn't really understand what it truly meant until it punched me in the guts and went, that's what it means. Oh, I can feel I'm going to get a bit well. If I cry today, yeah.
That's okay. You're among friends. Okay. Well, just listening to you, there is so much in there, but those are things you have learned about yourself fundamentally. Therefore, that's I would think about it and say what you're gonna when you're going to focus on being staying true to your purpose. And when it comes to what comes next, whether or not you change what you were planning to do beforehand, which you might have done,
Yep.
can imagine you're just gonna bring a whole bunch of new tools on the tool belt and superpowers to your superhero suit.
Yeah. I mean, the thought of me in spandex is not a good look. It's like a sausage stuffed into a, yeah, no, not a good idea. but the what comes next was a really interesting one when you brought it up with me, and I was thinking, and I was like, in some ways, I don't know, but that's kind of exciting. So the reason I don't know is that I'm in that zone at the moment where, because I've finally figured out some health things that have pushed me forward quite quickly this last couple of months, I'm able to do a lot more. But I also, my mind is stronger than my body often. And so I tend to push myself further than I sometimes should. Then my body goes, eh, no. So the I don't know bit is based on some, I don't know how fast I'm going to be able to do what I want to do. But one of the things while I was ill, and also the pandemic as well, the combination of those two, because I literally only just started to slightly get a little bit better just as we went into lockdown. So effectively, I was within reason forced to stay in the house close to 2.5 to 3 years, which was just awful. But what it made me think about is what do I actually want to do with the rest of my life? I knew I was coming up to 50, and in my family, we live to almost 100, so I'm kind of about halfway. So it's quite a big pivotal time that you've asked me this question. And the thing that I really want to be doing next is to do something that, and I probably won't ever retire because I kind of like working. It's exciting and it's interesting and people are around and stuff. So I thought, well, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? That means I don't ever have to feel like I'm working. And that's when I came up with the idea of not just doing FTSQ, the business consultancy, working with the nonconformists. What were my favorite nonconformists? And it's always been creative, artistic people, which is why during the pandemic, I saw that a lot of my artistic friends and artists and creatives were struggling because they couldn't put their work out in exhibitions and what have you. So that's when I came up with the idea of an online art gallery. And the question of what comes next with it is that I decided really on in this part of it. That I was going to run this business on instinct. There is a plan. There is definitely a plan. It keeps changing for lots of different reasons. A, I don't have the money to do all the things I want to be able to do yet, although working on that. Because it's on instinct, I don't always get it right and I have to adjust quickly. But luckily, I'm a quite quick decision maker. And if I realize I'm doing something wrong, I'm okay to change. And I think that's quite scary for a lot of people. For me, I don't find it particularly scary. I'm okay with that. But also, I don't have anybody relying on me. I don't have children. I don't have a husband or a long-term living partner or anything like that. There's just me to make the decision. So it makes it a little bit easier to kind of, I don't like the word pivot, but effectively pivot when I need to. It is not easy keeping true to that. It's exhausting. It's tiring. My body doesn't always work right. My mind bites me, and the where do you go with it? You have to dig really deep. So resilience is something that I think, you know, a lot of business people have really been struggling the last couple of years, either during the pandemic, but also we're in some kind of recession. I think there's a lot of people that are questioning themselves, questioning their businesses, not knowing what to do, and going, should I just keep going with this? Because they're hitting financial brick walls or other kind of brick walls. It's the what's next thing is very much for me about. I keep coming back to, I think you've used the word true north in something that you've written. And it's like, I keep having to pull myself back into where I'm going. I do tend to get pulled off into little side things, which I really have to manage not to do, and keep remembering where I'm going and digging deep. And it's not, and I think the thing is, I think everybody's got to realize you're not alone out there. And sometimes it might feel you are, like, you know, when you're a one person business owner, If you're like me, running, trying to do two businesses and struggling with it often, but at the same time, I know what I need to do and I know where I'm going and what have you. And I think just knowing that, go back to your true north, I think, is probably the way to kind of whatever that is.
So what is that for you? You said you need, this is the anchor for you, stay true to your purpose. What's the purpose?
A personal purpose is that I love helping people. Right. I'm going to be honest. It's a selfish reason I like helping people because it makes me feel good. I'm not going to pretend it doesn't, but I do care about people. So number one, it gives me joy to help other people believe in themselves, achieve their potential and what have you. My true love is art. I have got a huge passion for it, but I also have a huge passion to support the artists that tend to not like doing the business side of things, don't like doing the marketing. I want to give them space to be able to do what they want to do, which is create. And I think getting the headspace to do that while you're trying to do everything else is difficult for artists sometimes because their squiggly brains just don't like that businessy, straight line thinking kind of stuff. And what I want to be able to do, I often talk about branding, about legacy. And for me, I thought, well, what is the legacy that I want the gallery to be leaving behind at the end of my life? If I look back on my life at the end of it and go, I was able to help and support all of these artists to create the legacy that artistically they wanted to leave behind, then I'll have done my job. And it's the kind of thing that whether I needed to make money or not, I would still do because I really believe in it. Yeah. It makes me emotional thinking about like, oh my God. It's for them that sometimes when I'm feeling at my lowest, I remember I'm doing it for other people and I'm doing it for them and I need to keep going. Everybody gets driven by different things. I literally get driven by helping. And artists are fun people to help.
Well, I love the combination, and I learning about you're doing a lot of self-development, learning about being a coach many years ago. I had a wonderful mentor who helped me work out what my purpose in life was. It took me a while to realize my purpose in life, which is always about helping other people, but I realized it was actually about myself too, right? So
Yeah.
the and it can be a virtuous circle, partly it's helping you, partly it's helping other people. So I love yours about that, the first thing you're saying is that helping people makes me gives me joy, right?
Yeah.
So and
Which is a selfish thing when you think about it,
which
but that's okay.
it's and it's great, not but, and it's great. So it's a really a both and conversation. So I love that. If the legacy you want to leave behind is the supporting artist to leave their legacy.
Yeah.
So and yeah, I mean, I would totally say as a in a very different way, but like you, I had experiences in many, many different things before settling on something.
Yeah.
That makes generalists are business-like and entrepreneurial, and just you can the stuff which whether or not we enjoy it to great levels, we know how to do the business stuff. And you're clearly a marketing and brand expert. I almost said the word guru, which I'm sure you don't like.
Oh, don't say
Don't say
that
that word. But some of the things you were saying at that workshop, where I was going, yeah, she knows her stuff. So and
Oh, kind of helps that I was quite gobby at that one as well.
what gobby. There you go. For those outside the US and New Zealand, that means a little bit mouthy, just chatting a bit, being opinionated, great.
Opinioned, not opinionated. Well, probably a bit of both, maybe.
Yes, well, there you go, a bit of semantics.
Yeah.
But also with a very positive intention, right? And that came through loud and clear. That came
And
through.
it's really interesting because in my career, sometimes, and it has got me in trouble, I think because I am driven and I am ambitious, people have misunderstood my intentions. My intentions are always about trying to help other people. So it's been, when I was in agency land, it's quite a political place, and I'm not a political beast. So I couldn't give a shit about the politics at all. But I know that I intimidated a lot of people thinking I was trying to get their jobs or what have you. I couldn't have cared less. When I was offering advice and guidance on things, it was because I genuinely give a shit enough to help those people, often read incorrectly. Not my problem, but it impacted and it would hurt. It would hurt that people would misunderstand me, that because despite the fact, and it's starting to show more, I've always been the strong, powerful, straight talking, no bullshit person. But underneath, there's a marshmallow. And it punched me in the guts whenever people would misread my intentions because they were never anything but kindness.
I feel
Be
like,
emotional.
I feel like you're actually like, I feel like I'm listening to, it's like you're holding up an audio mirror to myself. It's like,
Oh, that's good. That's
I'm,
probably why we gravitated to chatting to each other the
there you
other day.
go. So, I mean, I'm, you know, the piece of artwork on the wall behind me. For the audio listeners, there's another piece of artwork on the wall behind me. It's by Hugh MacLeod, who did all of Seth Godin's artwork,
Oh, yes.
a commission. And I just gave him my purpose statement, which is was a hashtag or a hishtag if you're from New Zealand.
Hashtag.
There you go. You've been in London 21 years. And it was it said it's making potential possible, is that, and I realized it's for others as and myself. And that's what it, so it's about loving to help people, but I'm high energy, my, you know, I'm Tigger to a lot of people. The Eeyores in my life, like, you know, we have to balance each other out for the Winnie the Pooh fans. But yeah, with all of that, everything you're talking about, I get. And like the thing that upsets me, that triggers me the most is if I upset people because they've misread. So like, 'cause I really just want to help, right? So, but my energy can sometimes hit you in that spot where, you know, eventually sometimes I just have to remind myself, as in the, what's the book, the Don Miguel Ruiz, the by, it's something about the different, the, oh, I'm losing it, the principles, but one of them is effectively, it's not your stuff, it's theirs, right? So some,
Which you do forget when you're feeling it on the other side, I think.
and if you know, I also know when I'm feeling something because I lose my words, right? so
Yeah,
so
I can get like that. Although sometimes it's just my brain firing
Right.
weirdly, doesn't
Right. Let me
it?
ask you. And by the way, I like connecting dots, and there is over 100 alumni of the show, and one of them's a guy called Steve Chapman. So, have you ever heard of Steve?
Name rings a bell.
Worth looking him up. He's an outsider artist. His most famous thing was he did an outsider art gallery on one of the stanchions of the Hungerford Bridge that you can walk across from Charing Cross Station to the South Bank. And it was there in the summer of, I think, 2018. And he basically used, like, I can't actually tell you, he used a secret device to get the things up there. And it was so
Oh,
far away from the
cool.
walk. It was so far away from the walkway. It's part of his story to tell and not mine. But that it took the council or National Network Rail months to get it off. And he calculated he was the most viewed gallery in London that
That's
summer.
amazing.
There's so many people walk across that to and from Waterloo Station or whatever, and tourists go to the South Bank every year. But he's done, like, you know, online shows and all kinds of stuff. And it really is about supporting other people. So where are you with the, feel free to connect to him. He's got a show on the listings. What I was going to say is, where are you with what's the gallery concept? If I'm an artist, who has a squiggly brain and is nonconformist and really doesn't like the business stuff, what is the FTSQ gallery concept about?
Well, it's interesting because it could be depending on what it is they need. They either might get advised and come on board as an artist in the gallery, but I also have artists that aren't in the online gallery, but that so for example, we're starting to reach out to interior designers at the moment. So if I need to curate, I can go to artists that are in my network that are on the website to curate something that the interior design client might require. So there's kind of that kind of thing. But it could be that it's something from the consultancy that might need to be utilized. So the good thing is I can kind of stretch into both. The concept for the gallery was always to do it all online, but have the capability of pop-ups. I'm now looking at an idea which kind of goes beyond that. Part of it's to try and see if I can get some funding from the England Arts Council. But the idea is, and a big part of that is, what are you giving back to community? And I sat there and I thought to myself, what could I do that is giving back to community, that is helping my artists, which is helping my business, but is something that's still true to where I'm going with the gallery? And the idea is, I want to come up with a, I don't want to use the word program, but it's kind of that How do you use art to combat loneliness? And how do I help young people? How do I help the elderly? How do I help the BAME community, those with chronic illnesses and disabilities? Like, when you look at all those groups, there's going to be artists in amongst all of those. So for example, could we potentially be getting the older artists to work alongside young people that are maybe at risk in the community of maybe getting into gangs or, what is it? And the mere fact that a couple of years ago the government appointed a minister of loneliness, that is quite telling, that loneliness, even when you're in a job and you're around loads of people, it can be the loneliest place in the world sometimes if you don't feel like you're understood or you don't see it feel seen or whatever. And I think I would like to utilize my artists, find a physical space to be able to have drop-ins and workshops, and I don't know, it's still developing, it's still going. And yes, I want the art gallery will be the commercial side of making. I need to pay the bills at the end of the day, so do my artists. But I don't want that to be the underlying driving force of it. And I think to create something that will help utilize the beauty of the art and culture and my artist's ability to teach and to inspire and to excite through art and bring people in together, because community for me is really important. I'm trying to build a community and a real one, not some bullshit buying people in but attract the right kind of people into a community where they want to help each other, where they want to ensure that people don't feel lonely, that they aren't out on a limb or not being supported or looked after or seen. And I think, yeah, that's part of the North Star, I think, for me.
I can tell.
Yeah.
It's kind of resonant. Yeah, I mean, the during the pandemic, a lot of, I mean, I have lots of people around me, but they don't depend on me. I'm of that age. I'm a few years older than you. But I had a lot of solo time. I did a lot of work helping people out and a lot of pro bono stuff. And I also, but I got involved in all kinds of really cool things, right? And there's a Katie Elliott who was on the show a couple of years ago. At one point, she just ran a thing for people, and it was like, for a series of weeks of different things. And community is fascinating. One of the one things I love is an idea called Writer's Hour. And when I was writing every day, and Katie shared that idea, and you can log on to this group that just logs on into a Zoom Brady Bunch, like a massive gallery view, and
That's
for an
cool.
hour. And you leave your camera on and your microphone on, so you have to be in a kind of room where it's quiet. But you just do whatever your thing is, and it's amazing that. And also, I went to a thing called a silent book club a while ago.
What is that?
Well, it's the opposite of a book club, so you
A
don't.
library.
It's like a library, exactly. But you book a cafe or a pub, and everybody just goes along and they chit chat for a while. When the timing, if you arrive early, when the time comes, you'll just sit with your books. And there's something about community in that sort of less is more space. So there are ways to do things online, and the coolest one was the Isle of Lewis, where I have a lot of family roots. They have the very dark winters, right? And it's that far north, and they do a dark skies festival in January. And at one point, they decided to do the sort of art practice with an art teacher. They did it online,
Oh wow.
and
How did
so
that work?
was amazing. They had a bunch. They sent us out some art materials in advance, right, through the post.
Oh,
Nothing
that's cool.
fancy.
Well, that's a good idea, writing that down.
And then the teacher was a lady called Mari Gillis, and through the Ann Lanter Art Centre. But because of the pandemic and people couldn't really leave their houses, they just did it online instead of in person. And they had like a session, and everybody just, she ran through a bunch of ideas, and you went off and did your thing, and you came back, and everybody just presented their art. And a lot of it was visual, or most of it was visual. Some of it was written, spoken word, and all the different things. But it's this that word of community. I mean, community, I guess, is almost the opposite of loneliness, is feeling in the community and using art for it in different ways. And I mean, I'm sure you know about Seth Godin, right? As a marketing thought leader, shall we say? But he will always remind people that everything you do is art. Your work is your art.
It's funny that you say that because I have a hashtag that I use on my Instagram and my other social medias, which is FTSQ Gallery Art is Everywhere. And the reason I came up with that was because I quite like, I mean, I'm a photographer and I like just wandering around and seeing art in things that shouldn't be artistic, or maybe other people don't see it. So I'm a big fan of street art, for example. So if I see, I live in a really nice area in Wandsworth, but like everywhere, there's tagging and then there's proper, graffiti, but then there's where somebody just gets, just recently on the bridge by my house, there's been a spate of somebody spray painting mushrooms. God knows why, I have no idea. But, they're just weird and random. And I just think, oh, somebody saw beauty in that. And you can see it in plants, you can see it in, with Fibonacci code and all that with nature, but you can see it in so many different things. And I think you can see it in, I've taken photographs in toilets of wallpapers, or in cafes, or I'll see a beautiful chair that's somewhere. Or I think that ability to see art everywhere is A, you've got to take the time and slow down, which I think is a wonderful thing, because I think we're all running too fucking fast. And I just think also the ability to look at something beyond its function. Like I'm a lover of architecture. I even like brutalism, even though it, like what is the design of the Barbican, for example. It's brutal, but there's some beauty in it.
I'm a huge brutalism fan. My favorite cinema is the Curzon at the Brunswick Centre by Warren Street. It's a beautiful brutalist building.
And but I also like really intricate, beautiful buildings. Like one of my favorite things is to sit on the South Bank near the, and I can never remember the bridge. I think it's Waterloo. No, not Waterloo Bridge. The other one, the one that's back from the Westminster Bridge. And you're looking across at the Houses of Parliament. And I remember my first year here, it would be at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the middle of winter, sitting on the bench opposite that, looking across at that building as the lights all come up on the Houses of Parliament, and going, wow, like it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Not just Elizabeth Tower and the bell that's Big Ben and all that kind of thing, but the actual building itself, and thinking how it was made and the craftsmanship that went into that. Stunning.
Yeah, there's
Stunning.
so art is everywhere.
Art is everywhere.
So you've art and combating loneliness and building community and
Yeah. More important than any money I could ever make.
there you go.
Way
And
more important.
I'm a big believer if you put purpose first and in whatever you do business-wise, the money can follow, right? It's also a much more powerful asset if you're thinking in business terms. Right. I would like to thank you for slowing down.
That's okay.
For taking the time to share your thoughts. They're now recorded for posterity, and I'm sure a lot of people will listen to them now and into the future.
Hope
You're
so.
part of a community of well over 100 people who've come on this show, which
That's
continues to
amazing.
grow diversely every week. And I'm excited for you and
Okay.
the joy you will receive, and the people, and I'm excited for people you will be helping in different ways as you enter the second half of your life.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate the time that you've taken. A, when you saw me for who I was, not just the, as I said, the gobby person, but you saw beyond that quite quickly, I think. We connected quite quickly. So thank you for that. And just thank you for allowing me to just be me.
Yeah, perfect. There
Love
is
it.
not, and I'll finish my last thought, then I'm going to hand the mic to you to close, as I always do.
Sure.
And Ed Percival, my mentor, was a coach for over 50 years before he passed away suddenly. And he distilled all of his wisdom into three words: be more you. So the more you can be you, the more wonderful it is. Over to you, Lena. Give us some closing words for our audience.
Very simply, be kind to yourselves and believe in yourselves.
Simple. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank
Goodbye.
you very much.